the download on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman off this week. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN tonight. All right, so during the news, I did it. I put it up on my Facebook fan page. Go to Facebook.com, throw a like to the Matt Bubala show, and show us your look. My look is out there. That's the look the kids get when I'm deathly serious, and I want it to stop right now. I'd like you to share yours as well, because I'd like to see if maybe I need to work on that or if I've got a pretty good one. Zoe Schlanger is an environmental reporter who, who are you writing for now, Zoe? Is it QZ.com?
Yeah, it's Quartz.
Quartz.
Quartz like the mineral.
Quartz like the mineral.
QZ.com.
But it's QZ.com. Mm-hmm. I interviewed you a couple of years ago when you did a 10-day, did I say this right? I was talking about it earlier in the show. It was a 10-day meditation at a place where you couldn't talk for 10 days, I want to say, right?
Yeah, that was probably the wildest thing I've ever done for my job.
For 10 days, you went on this retreat. And what's it called again? It's a pretty famous style of retreat. What's it called? Do you remember?
It was called a Vipassana retreat. Yeah, no talking, no reading or writing, no eye contact for 10 days.
And if I... Oh, God, and there was no eye contact. I forgot that. You couldn't even look at the other people that were on this retreat?
It was pretty wild.
That's insane. Now, as I recall, and this was a couple of years ago when you and I talked about it, for the first couple of days, you thought this was completely insane. But by the end, I believe you said that your senses were heightened, that you were seeing colors better and appreciating nature and texture, and everything seemed to change. Like, by the end, you said, wow, this really is something, right? You bought in?
Yes. It was pretty incredible. I went in quite skeptical, as a journalist is supposed to. But at day four or so, suddenly all of my senses were heightened. And they do say that if you kind of remove one major action in your life, like talking or listening, other senses do get heightened. That lasted for a couple weeks after I got back. It has since faded, I have to say, much to my dismay. But it definitely changed things for a while.
Have you thought about doing it again?
Oh, definitely.
The problem is
I'm not sure I can swing another 10 days away.
I mean, that's a problem for anybody is finding 10 days where you're allowed to do anything is almost impossible, right?
Exactly.
And they didn't want you. 3 days is not enough. 5 days is not enough. You had to be there pretty much the 10 days, correct?
I did find that as much as I thought it could have been done faster, I didn't quite feel the effects for about 4 days. And so by day 8 or 9, I really had it down. Not an easy thing to do, meditating.
I imagine not. All right, let's talk a little bit about what you've been writing about lately. You write about the environment for Quartz. You can follow Quartz at QZ on Twitter, QZ.com. I saw some tweets from you earlier this week talking about Harvey and the devastation down in Houston and the area and how many manufacturing plants are out there, especially ones that produce chemicals, and how dangerous this could end up being. What's the latest you're hearing about what could be happening down there?
Well, the area that Harvey hit is really interesting. It's the most critical place in the U.S. for all of our natural gas and oil refining. It's also the major chemical producing part of our country. Harvey basically barreled a path right through what some people call chemical corridor. And several chemical plants and about 10 refineries had to be taken offline. And that's about 16% of the nation's refining capacity. It's a very significant interruption in service. But what happens when you take... Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, if they're building all these refineries and all these plants right down by the Gulf and where hurricanes kind of happen once in a while, I would assume that there are precautions built in, that when they build these places, you know, that they're, you know, thinking about, well, what happens if, and these are all built to withstand something sort of like this, right?
You would hope that. Harvey was truly an unprecedented amount of rainfall. So a lot of these plants might have had some controls for flooding, but most of them were completely overwhelmed. You build refineries and chemical plants near water so that your shipping can be easier and faster and you can move your products. But nobody was really anticipating a storm quite this intense. But when you're near water and when the climate is warming and raising sea levels, this is something we can expect more of in the future.
What's the danger with overflooding at these places? Are they built to shut down if they have to? Is there a danger of chemicals leaking if flooding is too bad? Are they set up to protect themselves in case of this? Or because of the unprecedented nature, is there a danger that all sorts of things are going to be leaking into this water that is covering the whole area down there?
Well, most of these high-risk plants do have very efficient safety systems in terms of protecting, let's say, the life or health of their employees, that kind of a thing. But the problem is that all chemical plants and refineries are meant to be operated 24 hours a day. They're really not designed to shut down. So when they have to shut down, it's really an emergency situation. And what they do is they start flaring off their chemicals or flaring off excess gases to avoid an explosion. But what that means is that they're, all of the kind of controls you have on air pollution go out the window during emergency situations. So each one of these refineries, as they were shutting down, were releasing many, many, many times the amount of pollution into the air than they normally would. And this is affecting, this is something that will affect people nearby who were not able to evacuate.
I think I saw you tweet or you retweeted or somebody else tweeted about a concern that the whole set of air quality monitors that are down there might have been shut off during Harvey. Is that true? Have you heard anything? Are they not going to have good data on what happened after this is all over?
Yes. A colleague of mine at the New Republic did confirm with the city that the environmental quality agency turned off all of the air quality monitors in the midst of the storm. This is probably for practical reasons. You can't go check those monitors or service them when they're flooded. They've probably lost several of them anyway. They're probably inoperable. Mm-hmm. But it does mean we won't know exactly what the air quality was like. That said, I have read that in other moments like this, when plants do shut down and do flare off their chemicals, they tend to be emissions that are off the charts. So they don't fully register anyway.
Oh, really?
So all
you
know,
because
it's quite a lot.
So they wouldn't necessarily, even if they left them all on, get accurate readings anyways, because likely so much pollution is being discharged into the air with the shutdowns that it wouldn't be able to read them anyways.
Yeah, those are some reports I've seen elsewhere. But the chemicals, the refineries do post their estimated emissions. Oftentimes their equipment also is unable to read what their emissions exactly are in this moment. But there's a website online where you can look at each individual chemical and how much was approximately released during the storm.
So that's what's going into the air. What's the concern level on what's going into the water? So many places are 4 feet or more deep in water. And if chemical plants are leaking out chemicals into that water, is there a danger that everybody walking around in the water, the pets that are you know, being rescued in the water, is there any danger known right now to the people that are wading through all of that?
Nothing is completely verified, but I have talked to toxicologists who are very concerned. One thing that the area has a lot of around Houston, there are more Superfund sites, meaning legacy toxic waste sites, than anywhere else in Texas, are centered around where Harvey hit, essentially. And in some cases, these are settling ponds or pits full of toxins that maybe have been partially remediated, or there's still toxins in the soils. Now, of course, these are underwater. One report in the Washington Post cited a toxicologist talking about seeing children swimming in some of these retaining ponds that are nearby a Superfund site. People are warning people to try and stay out of the floodwater as much as possible. There's definitely things you wouldn't really want exposing your body to.
So when all of this is gone, when the waters recede and they start figuring out what they have to rebuild, what they have to tear down, if your house down there only received minimal damage from water, and so it's going to be saved, it's not going to be torn down, it's going to be fixed, is there going to be testing needed on, you know, there's always mold issues, but is there going to be other testing needed on things that could be left behind in the woodwork and the foundation of homes or in the soil of the yards?
I would think definitely. I'm not exactly sure whether or not the city or the state would actually do that testing. But if I were a homeowner, I would definitely want my soil tested afterwards. We know even in New York after Sandy, people's yards were contaminated with toxins. Anytime there's high water situations, you're mixing together things that are really never supposed to come in contact with humans, and they're settling into all sorts of things. So if I was a homeowner, I definitely would want to get all that tested. Also, people with wells who get their water from wells won't have the same testing for their drinking water as the rest of the municipal system. So they should definitely check to see what the status is of their well water.
I imagine anybody with a well, if their home or residence or anything was underwater, should be really cautious about that, right?
Definitely. This is a tough time for that.
Yeah, no kidding. What is the danger, Zoe? I mean, if so my backyard got flooded and there were some dangerous contaminants, whatever. If my grass is growing and everything seems normal, do I really worry about what's in the yard? I imagine if I have little kids that are crawling around in the grass, things like that, maybe you say you have to worry about that. But in general, would you be really concerned if it was your yard down there that got flooded?
That's a good question. I think the main concerns you basically laid out, young children playing in the dirt or in the yard or pets coming in contact with it. Pets are known to, like small children, have a much lower threshold for toxins, meaning they could be poisoned much more easily. And besides that, I probably just wouldn't plant a vegetable garden. I wouldn't eat something growing out of the ground. But if people have other concerns like the structural safety of their home after a flood or mold in their walls, I would say those are much higher priority issues immediately following the storm.
Well, and those are pretty common ones. I mean, that's the type of thing that I imagine is at least relatively automatically looked into, that you're not going to have to worry about having to force somebody to take a look at that. But I imagine whether there's contaminants of other sorts or not, or something you have to be a little bit more ready to speak up about and really force the issue with when you're dealing with insurance companies or builders or whatever you have going on there, wouldn't you? Because mold, everybody knows about mold, so they got to do that. They know that, right? But the rest of it is somebody be like, you're crazy. There's no other things to worry about. If there's no mold, you're fine.
That really could be true. Sometimes the burden of proof for these things does fall on the homeowner. And you do have to be a bit savvy. You do have to kind of question your surroundings a little bit if you're concerned about these things. They are not typically standard procedure, I don't believe, for everyone to check.
I know you're traveling tonight, Zoe. What are you working on next? What are you writing about that we should look forward to at Quartz?
Well, I'm going to be heading down to Texas, but not actually part of the Harvey-affected Texas. I'm actually heading to McAllen, Texas, later next month. And I'll be doing some reporting on climate change there, that part of southern Texas and the part that Harvey struck are some of the fastest warming regions in the U.S. They're warming extremely quickly and dealing with all sorts of water issues, flooding for sure, but also freshwater dwindling and drinking water problems. So that region is having a lot of climate change issues lately.
Well, you know, the climate change is a real, you know, became a hot potato in this because people that don't believe in climate change want to say, hey, it's a hurricane, it's going to happen, whatever. And then, but I imagine that a scientist would say, okay, yes, climate change did not necessarily cause this hurricane, but the strength of it could certainly maybe be attributed to the fact that the water was so warm, and the warm water is what gives all the strength to the hurricane, right?
Exactly. You said it. Yeah, that's a very important distinction that a lot of people overlook. We can't say climate change actually caused this particular storm. You can't really do that with any particular storm. But we know pretty much for sure that the conditions were set up by climate change to make this far more impactful, far more damaging. Hurricanes are basically heat engines. They take all of their energy from heat. And with such warm waters in the Gulf, we had record temperatures all of last winter. People were calling it bath water. It was really in the high 80s, very, very warm water. There was a lot of fuel for Harvey. Also, the record heat in the air, the hotter your air is, the greater the carrying capacity for moisture. So that hot air could hold a lot more moisture than it could have had it been not quite so hot. And we do know the record temperatures are basically due to human-driven climate change.
And
so those are two factors, yeah.
And the warming of the Gulf waters is not necessarily, the climate change concern is that's not an anomaly this year, the water's so warm. It's that the water is going to continue being warmer than it normally was. So if a hurricane comes and hits in the right place again, or wherever hurricanes are hitting, if that water keeps getting warmer, there's going to be more fuel for possibly future hurricanes to be more powerful like this one.
Exactly. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that our oceans suck up about 90% of the excess heat in the atmosphere. So they're taking on the brunt of climate change. So when you feel your summer's getting hotter and hotter, just know that the sea is warming excessively too. And that's not going to change. That trend we expect to see continue.
I read that this hurricane dropped so much water down on the area that it was able to keep strength because it was sucking the water back up. That the water, normally a hurricane hits land and starts to dissipate pretty quickly and lose its strength, but this dumps so much water so fast that it was able to kind of regenerate itself because it was sucking some of that water back up. Have you read that or reported on that as well?
I have read that. Scientific American did a great story on this. Kind of a wild thing to imagine. Typically, hurricanes wear themselves out. They drop all their water over land. Eventually, they're still going over land and have no more water to drop. But apparently, if a hurricane drops enough water to cover the land more than 50%, which we had much more of than that in Texas, that water on land acts like a mini ocean. So the hurricane continues to suck up water and then drop it overland again and just becomes its own self-feeding water machine, sort of dystopic sounding.
And just so that we are dispelling something, there was never a shark on the freeway, right?
No.
Okay.
No. Oh, my goodness. No. Fake photo. Don't believe everything you see on Twitter. Photoshop is a powerful tool.
It was such a great photo, though. How cool is it? Real life Sharknado.
Right, exactly. Although I did see people catching fish in their homes. Those were real videos.
Yeah.
There were definitely fish ending up in people's flooded homes, but not quite as dramatic as a shark, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, a shark would be worse. But anytime, you really don't want to catch fish in your house. That's still a bad day, even though it's kind of cool. I caught a fish, but it was in my house. That's really not a good end to that story.
Yeah, when you have fish in your house, you know something's deeply wrong. Yeah, definitely.
Zoe Schlanger is a reporter for Quartz. You can follow Quartz at QZ on Twitter. Follow Zoe at Zoe Schlanger on Twitter as well. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone. Safe travel, Zoe.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
All right, we'll talk again. Zoe Schlanger. At Zoe Schlanger on Twitter, great environmental reporter for them, and somebody who lasted 10 days meditating, something I don't know if I could ever do.